All right, welcome to Between the Testaments, or called Intertestamental Period. We're going to do some housekeeping material as we just get started. Let me start my own recording here so I don't mess that up. 1, 2, 1, 0. Okay, welcome to the period between the testaments, also called Intertestamental Period. If you want to keep up with all the material that we're going to put online, there's a link that you can follow, and I'm going to put it on the screen temporarily here. And so if you go to thebible.net, that's thebible.net, /GSOP, that stands for Georgia School of Preaching, / Between the Testaments. I'm going to show you what's there in just a second, but I'll give everybody a few moments to jot that down. Thebible.net, /GSOP for Georgia School of Preaching, and then / Between the Testaments. What are you going to find when you go there? Well, I'm going to show you that by going live to what's there now. So if you go to it, this is what you're going to get. Thebible.net, /GSOP Between the Testaments. And so you'll see a number of files that are already there. There will be audio files that will be added later. There will be video files that are going to be added later. And everything that we put on the screen during the course of this evening and tomorrow evening and Saturday, all the slides, all the handouts, everything is all going to be located there. The syllabus will be added later because I'm still tweaking that. So there's a method to the madness. Everything that starts with HO stands for handout, and they're numbered. So the first thing that you're going to see when the syllabus is added is going to be HO, or handout 001. And I'm going to go through some of the other material that's there in just a second, so you will see what's going to be available to you. We're not going to use all the files that are located there in each class, but over the course of tonight's class and tomorrow night's class, and during the day on Saturday, we will reference, at least in passing, all of those files. And so some of this stuff is going to come up later when we actually go through the slides as we get into the heart of the class. So it's going to take a few moments to do all the stuff that we want to do. So you click the first one, and this is an extended bibliography. This is not all the stuff that you have to read, but these are materials that you might want to use to become more familiar with as you study this in depth. You'll notice that there's an asterisk by three texts that are here. The first one that I'll make reference to is called Exploring the New Testament World. It's an incredible copy. It's probably 20 years old, 22 years now old now that I look at it. But it's forward by Bruce Metzger, who's a New Testament scholar at Princeton Seminary for many years. This is a very, very, very useful text. It's very accessible, which means it's not overly academic. Has lots of charts, lots of graphs, and lots of pictures, and it's a very, very good resource. But it's a little too much for what I want us to do in our class tonight. The last one that's mentioned, Pfeiffer's text, has been around since the late 50s. Charles Pfeiffer, this is very, very brief. It's about 100 pages long. And it just focuses, and very briefly, on the history and the dynamic of things that took place in the period between the Testaments. And so the text that we're going to focus on mostly, and all this will be included in emails that will be sent out to everybody, is the second one that's mentioned there, and it's called Between the Testaments from Malachi to Matthew. So if you go to a search your favorite book site, whatever it is that you might look at on eBay, half.com, or Amazon, whatever, Thrift Books or A-Books, and if you type in Between the Testaments, you're going to see like 30 different books. If you type in from Malachi to Matthew, you're going to see a lot of different books. But I don't think you'll find anything but this book if you type in Between the Testaments from Malachi to Matthew. And the two authors are Brown and Holzapfel. We're going to have more about to say about that. And the reason why we want to use that book is because of its accessibility. So let me go back to our slides here. This, again, is the website. So here are a series of books that I've been reading through in the last couple of months. You don't have to read through all of those. And so one of the books, anyway, the second one from the top, Pfeiffer's book, is recommended. The one that's on the extreme right-hand side just came out at the end of the year. If you ever want to pay $45 for a decent book, that's a book to buy. It is like an encyclopedic index of everything connected to the New Testament world. And it's a recent offering, and I highly recommend that, but it's a little bit too much for what we're doing in the course of the class. So this again is the bibliography. That's the top part of it. This is the bottom part of it. And this is the text that we're going to use. It's called Between the Testaments from Matthew to Malachi. Or change that from Malachi to Matthew. And I'm going to go quickly through what we're going to cover in the class. And as I go through it, you might say, well, that's a lot of material. And it is, and we may not get through absolutely all of it, but we will get through a lot of it. And the value of this book is it's available in print. It's also available digitally in the Kindle world. If I can switch over to that very quickly, I'll show you that I keep my copy up all the time. There it is. So this is my copy of the text. If I go to the cover, you will see that's the same book. So I have a print copy and a digital copy. I'm just crazy about stuff like that. But it's a very good book, and I encourage you, if you can, to get a copy of that either digitally or in print because of its usefulness. So the outline of what we're going to do in class is taken in part from this book. And I say in part because I'm adding to it from the other resources that I've looked at and adding my own material along the way. So once we get past the introduction, which we're going to do in just a little bit here, this is the first breakdown, major breakdown in this particular book. It deals with periods of history. The first one deals with Jewish exiles' return. What's that about? Well, we're going to look at a chart, an overview of biblical history in a little bit, that chronicles what happened at the end of the period of Judah alone and into the beginning of the Babylonian captivity. And then, when that ended, what took place when all the children of Israel, those who returned, came back from Babylon and re-entered the land of Judah. So that's where we're going to start. It's at the end of the Old Testament canon, and we want to start there. That sets the stage for all the material that we're going to present during this period between the Testaments. The second element that we're going to discuss, hopefully we'll get through all of that tonight, is Jerusalem arises from the ashes. Just a reminder, or an advance warning, so to speak, when we get into the period between the Testaments, 20 years into their captivity, the children of Israel in the northern kingdom were captured by Assyria. The city of Samaria, the capital city of the northern kingdom, fell in about 722, 723 BC. And those people were scattered to the four winds, so to speak. Some of them remained in that area, but many of them were scattered to nations around the world. And that's just a standard policy that conquering nations practiced at that time. 116 years later, the southern kingdom of Judah, Jerusalem being the capital, it went into captivity. So by the time this happened, the northern kingdom was long since gone for more than a century. And so after they start going into captivity, there's roughly three periods of carrying away, starting about 606 BC, 10 years later, and then 10 years later, that they're carried away in droves by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. It's during this time that Daniel and Ezekiel go into captivity. Those are two prophets that prophesied during the exile. And they are in the land of Babylon. And a lot of the people think, well, as long as we're in the land of Babylon and the temple still stands, we'll be okay because God lives in that house on the temple hill. Well, find out 20 years later, Ezekiel tells them God's left the temple. The Spirit of God is no longer over the most holy place. He's gone outside the walls of the temple. He's gone outside the walls of the city of Jerusalem. And God's presence, so to speak, has gone over the hills and far away. And by the way, the temple's destroyed. And so when they come back, 50 years after the temple is destroyed, that's one of the things that they have to do, is they have to rebuild everything. So Jerusalem is in ruins. The temple is gone. The priesthood is non-existent because of what happened 50 to 70 years earlier. And so they have to start all over from scratch. And so this segment of biblical history is talking about what happened at the very end of Old Testament Revelation. Closing chapters of 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, the prophet Haggai and Zechariah deal with this period of time. Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, key figures that we're going to talk about, they come into play during this period of time. And the things that happen in this period of biblical history set the stage for what happens when the Old Testament Revelation ends, usually taken to be the book of Malachi. So starting from the return from Babylonian exile, which is about 536, 535 BC, until the time of the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. That period is often referred to as the period of Second Temple Jewish history. Why is it called Second Temple Jewish history? Because the first temple that was built by Solomon was destroyed while the children of Israel were in exile. So we're starting with them coming back. When these people come back, the temple that they were used to seeing, if they were old enough to remember the first one, the temple that they were used to seeing, Solomon's temple, is no more. And the city of Jerusalem is desolate. In fact, it's scholastic opinion that people didn't reside anywhere near Jerusalem because of the devastation that it suffered. But the temple is no more. So all of that has to start all over again. So that's going to happen during this period of time called Jerusalem Arises from the Ashes. So now, as we move from that, we're going to get into material that's purely extra-biblical. When I say extra-biblical, I don't mean the Bible doesn't anticipate these things, because in the book of Daniel, in the second chapter and other chapters, Daniel speaks about a succession of world kingdoms, starting with the king that was then reigning, that's Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, followed by the Medes and the Persians. Those are the ones who give the decree to allow the children of Israel to return back to the land of Jerusalem and Judah. Followed then by the Grecian Empire, that's Alexander the Great, and then followed by the Roman Empire. And it's during the days of these kings, Daniel 2:44, that the God of heaven sets up a kingdom that's not going to be left to man, and it's not going to be able to be destroyed. That's referring to God's spiritual kingdom, referred to as the eternal kingdom in writings of Peter, referred to as the kingdom of God, Jesus' kingdom disciples, and often referred to as the church. So hopefully we'll get close to that point this evening. If we don't, we'll make up for it later. So we're going to go slow in the beginning of the class tonight, to make sure that we grasp everything that's going on that sets the stage for these following events. Next thing we want to look at is the Maccabean War breaks out. What's that about? Well, there are a group of people who were Jews in the kingdom of Judah who revolted against intrusion by a particular king, one of the Seleucids. We're going to mention that in more detail as we get into our material tonight, that kind of recaptured the city of Jerusalem and reestablished the system of worship that had been started up again just a few hundred years before. So very quickly what happens is the temple's destroyed 20 years into captivity, so that's about 586, 587 B.C., and when they come back from captivity, 50 years later after it's destroyed, 70 years after captivity started, that's a fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy, they start the rebuilding process. But the rebuilding of the temple isn't completed right away. It takes more than 20 years to complete the building of the temple. Not that it should have, but that's just how much time they took. And so the temple is rebuilt. That's the second temple. That's the temple that during the days of Jesus, Herod had been adding on to for 40 plus years. That's the second temple. That temple is desecrated in the second century prior to the time of Christ. And this war that we're addressing is how they reclaimed the temple and restarted that system again. So you see there's an ebb and flow from the standpoint of what goes on in the history of the Jewish people. These people, the Maccabeans and the Hasmoneans, the names don't make any sense yet, but as we get to those periods in history, they will. This is a time when there are no kings in Israel. That kingdom is gone. There are no kings in Judah. That kingdom is gone. There are continual kings in the seed line of David who could be kings if there were kings. But Jeremiah prophesied that following the last king that reigned on the throne in Judah, nobody who was a descendant of David would reign on David's throne. Let me clarify something. That does not mean that there were no descendants of David from that point forward. It means that there was no descendants of David reigning on the throne, and there's a difference. One of the things that you see spelled out in the genealogical records of both Luke and Matthew, especially Matthew, is that the seed line of David continued, but none of them reigned on the throne. This is a time during which no kings were reigning, but yet there was an attempt to take back what had been taken from them spiritually and physically during the times of the Maccabeans and the Hasmoneans. And then, starting with Pompey, the Roman general who conquered the city of Jerusalem in 63, and going for the next up to the destruction of Jerusalem in 68 to 70 AD, and then after that, the Romans ruled in Israel. And so the Romans were coming. And then after that, we're going to talk about Herod, who was a king appointed by Rome and ruled during the time of Christ. So this period of history is going to take us starting from the very tail end of the Old Testament and into the New Testament, going through all the stuff that happened. So sometimes we refer to the period between the Testaments as the silent period. And that's kind of unfortunate because lots of stuff happened. It's silent in the sense that there weren't prophets all over the place like there were during the time of Israel's history. It's silent from the standpoint we have no written record of those divinely inspired prophets that existed before. But it's not silent. There are lots of things that are going on. Again, Daniel spoke about kingdoms that would exist going from Nebuchadnezzar up to the time of Christ. He documents them simply from the standpoint of name, but we don't see all of those things recorded in divine history. So let's move a little bit forward. The next thing we want to do, if you look at the catalog online at gsoponline.org, you'll see that one of the things that this class is designed to talk about is not only the history of what's going on between the period of Testaments, but also the writings, the sacred writings that are alleged to have taken place during this time. So we're going to ask the question, what is Scripture? What does it mean to say that something is inspired Scripture from the Old Testament, the New Testament? And how does that come into play during this period between the Testaments? Well, the reason why that's so critical now is there are lots of things that are written during this time that, though they don't have the weight of Scripture, nonetheless have a tremendous amount of influence from the standpoint of what we know goes on during this period of time. So there is no prophet from the close of Malachi who's keeping a divinely appointed record, as did Moses or as did Isaiah, Jeremiah, of all the events that took place between the close of the Old Testament canon and the New Testament canon beginning. That doesn't mean things weren't happening, and that doesn't mean other people weren't recording things. So some of those documents that we're going to allude to, and again, we're just going to do this in passing, are the Dead Sea Scrolls. The apocryphal writings, I'll bring a copy if I remember tomorrow night, of a biblical text that has these apocryphal writings between the close of the Old Testament and the New Testament, and we'll explain why they're called that. And then also the pseudepigraphal writings. Now, that's a huge 50-cent word, pseudepigrapha, that means false titles, false inscriptions alleged to be inspired writings. They are not, but that's what they are alleged. And there's a mindset that goes on beside this. And incidentally, all of these slides that we're going through now will be archived and presented at the link that we talked about before. Just let me do this very quickly so that we don't forget it. Everything that you're seeing now will be eventually up at that website. And so all the slides that we're presenting now and everything that you're going to see on the screen will be found there. So I'm encouraging you to take notes and add to it as you want, but just a reminder that all those things are going to be up. All right, so let me go back to where we were from the standpoint of history. We did that, and then the sacred writings. So these are writings that some people claimed to be inspired and sacred in between the Testaments, but they were not. That does not mean they aren't useful from the standpoint of information we might glean from that. And then we're going to talk about prophecy, biblical prophecy, especially biblical prophecy as it relates to a style of prophecy that was developing and that expanded during this period between the Testaments, and especially apocalyptic literature. You see some of that in Daniel, Ezekiel, and especially in the book of Revelation. But that particular style of writing flourished during these periods between the Testaments. And so we want to talk a little bit about that going forward. And then the last thing we want to talk about in the period between the Testaments are key Jewish players. And I don't mean anything negative by that. Key Jewish groups, leaders, and religious groups that developed during this period between the Testament that have impact on what we're going to see when we get into the New Testament. Obviously, there were priests, Levites, and scribes going back to the time of Moses. But some of the impetus and the impact that they have going forward is going to be rather unique. And so we want to talk about that. It wasn't exactly the same as the influence that they had going back to the law of Moses and what we see at the close of the Old Testament canon. By the time the New Testament starts, there's a different role for priests and Levites and scribes that had been influenced by these priests and Levites and scribes themselves. More about that when we get there. Where did the Samaritans come from? Samaria was the capital city, formerly known as Sebaste, which was the capital city of the northern kingdom. But now Samaritans is not just people who lived in a particular city, and Samaria was not just a particular city, it's now a region. And so if you looked at a map of Palestine during the days of Jesus, starting in the north, you're going to see the region of Galilee. That's where Jesus was raised later in Nazareth, after he was in Bethlehem, went to Egypt, came back and was raised in Nazareth. And a lot of his ministry took place in and around the city of Nazareth and in the places along the Sea of Galilee. But south of that, you see the area of Samaria and the people known as the Samaritans. We want to talk about who they are and how they play into the period between the Testaments. And then we're going to see Essenes and Zealots. And the Essenes are not directly referred to during the time of the New Testament, but they're definitely going to be alluded to in some of the things that we look at. And you're going to see Zealots. Who were these people? They were a religious, political people that were very tired of oppression of the nation of Israel by, at that particular time, the Romans and others. And we're going to address them going forward. We'll even see that one of the apostles is identified as a Zealot. Now, the next three names have an asterisk about it, because they are not directly represented in this particular text by Holzapfel and Brown, but we want to talk about them as we have time anyway. Sadducees. When you close the book of Malachi and you get to the book of Matthew, in between those two, you don't see any divine revelation that tells us where they came from. You don't see any divine revelation that tells us where the Pharisees came from, nor do you see any divine revelation in this context, in this quote-unquote silent period, about what the Sanhedrin was. And we'll talk about each of those again as we have time. So all of these groups took on a different perspective in the period after the close of the Old Testament canon and before the start of the New Testament canon. And so we want to see who they are and how they come into play. All right, so that's an outline of what we're going to do. And I'm going to jump ahead to one of the first things I want us to do to give us a picture of how all of this is going to make sense. So I'm going to make this a little bit bigger. It may get a little bit too big at one point. But I want us to talk about periods of biblical history. And we're not going to talk about all of them. If you get all the way down to the bottom, if you look all the way over to the left-hand side, the period of Christ's kingdom and the church, Christ, preparation for Christ, right there is the intertestamental period. That's what we're talking about. The intertestamental period comes way down the list of biblical history. So I'm not going to go through all of these in detail, but I want to hit them. The period before the flood, called antediluvian, which just means the period before the deluge, starts at the creation, goes to the time of the flood. Period after the flood starts at the end of the flood, goes up to the time of the call of Abraham. The patriarchal period, that goes from the time of call of Abraham through Joseph, who was the son that was pivotal from the standpoint of fulfilling Abrahamic promise in Genesis chapter 15. The period of Egyptian captivity, this is not the same as Assyrian or Babylonian captivity, during which Joseph's family came to Egypt, initially to escape the famine that was in Canaan, but then later became enslaved. Then they are delivered at the time of the Exodus, which means they exited or they left the land of Egypt. That goes on till the period of conquest of Canaan. This is during the time when Joshua is going to be the leader, successor of Moses. That starts when they cross the Jordan until the time of the Judges. And we see after the end of the book of Joshua, we see the book of Judges immediately after that in our text. Period of Judges is going to go from the time of the first judge to the time of the first king. That's would have been Saul. Now we want to get into this period of history that we refer to as the United Kingdom. What's significant about that? There was a time from the time of Saul through David and through Solomon that there was one kingdom. It was just all Israel. The name Israel was the name given to Jacob in Genesis chapter 32 after he wrestled with the angel. It means Prince of God, one who serves with God. And the kingdom was united for 120 years. But because of Solomon's sins, God determined to divide the kingdom. Not during the time of Solomon, for his father's sake, David, but during the time of his son Rehoboam. And that's what happens. So during the period of the divided kingdom, Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, is the first king in the southern kingdom that's not united. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, is going to become the king in the northern kingdom. And he's going to be given 10 tribes. Now the significance of that is the northern kingdom was ahead of the southern kingdom from the standpoint of how far they were in evolved in idolatry and other things that were wrong. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, instituted a false system of worship. Read about this in 1 Kings chapter 12 and following, that every king after that began to follow. And eventually, the northern kingdom fell. That's when we talk about the fall of Samaria. That's the fall of the city Samaria, not the region. Again, it's not going to be known as the region of Samaria until later. So that brings us to this period of time that we alluded to before, when the kings in Judah reigned solely by themselves because there were no kings in Israel because they were taken into captivity. And just a reminder, when you read through the prophets of Isaiah, there are other prophets that address this, and especially the prophet Jeremiah, they come in succession, Isaiah first and then Jeremiah. They warned the southern kingdom that what happened to the northern kingdom is going to happen to you. In fact, this is the illustration they used. They called the northern kingdom your big sister. And they said, you are following in the footsteps of your big sister. And what happened to her is going to happen to you unless you change. And so what happened in the northern kingdom, being conquered by the Assyrians and taken away, was eventually predicted to happen but to the southern kingdom. And that brings us down to the fall of Judah. Roughly 722, 723 is when the city of Jerusalem began the fall of Jerusalem is about 606 BC or so. That's when the city of Jerusalem began to be captured. It was taken in waves over a period of time. The Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar established his own kings. They were in the Davidic line, but he deposed one, Jeconiah, and put another one, Zedekiah, and he imposed tributes on that. And so the period of captivity is beginning, but it's going to get worse. After the fall of Judah and the fall of the city of Jerusalem, more people are carried away. Zedekiah has his sons killed in front of him, and then his eyes are poked out, and he is taken into captivity. And there they're going to remain for the duration of 70 years. So the time frame on the other side, when it says 606 BC and so forth, this right here, that's the rough start, the rough end. They were in captivity for 70 years, according to fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy. And they were in captivity that period of time to fulfill the Sabbath days that they had forsaken for hundreds of years. Now here's where we get. We get to the period of restoration. This is where we're going to take up the children of Israel coming back to the land of Canaan, to the land of Palestine, to the southern province of Judah, to the city of Jerusalem, to reestablish things the way they used to be. And so Cyrus, by this time, we're going to address this later, is a king in Persia. He issues a decree allowing people that are captive in the Persian territories to return back home. That's not just to the Jews, that's to anybody. And that's what they're going to do. So they go back and they begin to restart everything that was going on before. So you see in this explanation, Babylon fell to Persia. Cyrus, king of Persia, allowed the Jews and other nations to return to Jerusalem. Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah, and others are going to be leaders, causing the children of Israel to get back and rebuilding what had formerly existed. Initially, at one point, there were only 20,000 people living in and around the city of Jerusalem during the time of Nehemiah. It may have grown to 50,000. And one of the things that's key to understand is that most of the Jews never came back. They were scattered by the Assyrians, and many of them remained in Babylon. Now stop and think. If you are, we have friends of ours that have been involved in that ministry for many years, who are from other places, and one brother I'm thinking of has been involved in Caribbean mission work for a long time from the Caribbean, and when he came to the States to go to school and was involved in planting churches in the States, his two sons were born in the States. And so when mom and dad wanted to go back to the Caribbean, that was going home. But it wasn't going home for the kids. They weren't born there. They were born here. So his sons are still here. Now imagine that scenario when the children of Israel go into captivity. They go into captivity. They're there for 70 years. If you were 10 years old and you live through the captivity, you're an old man or an old woman. You come back. But during the time that you were there, you grew up, you got married, you had kids, and your kids were born in Babylon. That's the only home they knew. And so those folks, a lot of them, didn't come back to Jerusalem. They stayed where they were. And so one of the things that I want us to understand was it almost looks like a piecemeal, haphazard effort to restore things the way they were because the nation was never the same again. No king sitting on the throne. The temple's destroyed. The city's decimated. Nobody's even living there. The governor that's reigning in a nearby place in Galilee, he doesn't live there because it's not fit to live in. And a lot of the people who were freed to come back stayed where they were. No thanks, Mom and Dad. No thanks, Grandma, Grandpa. I was born in Babylon. I'm staying here. So they established homes. They built houses. They established families. They worked there, and they had that freedom to do so. So they are now the second generation expatriates who grew up in Babylon, and because they had lived there so long, they weren't going to go back. So the people who came back during this people of restoration are a small percentage of those who used to be there. Just a reminder to give us a perspective. When the children of Israel left the land of Egypt, according to the opening chapters of the book of Numbers, there were 603,550 men of fighting age. Those who were qualified according to age, 20 years old upward, and there's a cutoff of that. Those who weren't priests, those who weren't maimed, those who weren't invalid, those who weren't children, those who weren't, little girls and women. That's just the number of men who were able to go to war. So the number of people who left Egypt has been estimated between 2 to 5 million people. We don't know the total count. Now, this is many years later. That's 1,500 years before. We're talking about 1,000 years later when they're coming back, and only 20,000 people or so come back. What's my point? Israel's not what they used to be. And that's what I want us to really sink into as we're going through this material tonight. Israel is not what they used to be. And God says, I want you to start over. God says, I want you to rebuild the temple. We don't have Solomon's army. We don't have Solomon's wealth. We don't have Solomon's connection to the king of Tyre who provided workmen. We don't have the riches and the wealth and the grandeur that Solomon had that enabled this to happen the first time. We are scrimping by, and we're relying on the Persian kings to allow us to do this, and they are helping finance it, but there's no King Solomon. There's no wise King Solomon with all his wisdom who puts together this incredible construction project over many years with tens of thousands of workers. It's just us.
That's going to be
part of what we're going to see.
David acquired those materials.
David gathered most of the materials and most of the money that Solomon used. And if you read through the books of Chronicles, you're going to see a huge measure of that. The books of Chronicles are written from a very Davidic-centric viewpoint simply because of David's emphasis in supporting the priesthood, supporting the temple, and gathering almost everything. The plans for the temple were given to David. David gave them to his son. David raised money on his own. He raised money from all the countries that he defeated, and some of that loot went into the coffers of the temple. David gave some of his own money. That's specified there, not as a bragging thing, but David would say, I am supporting the work of the temple. Money's coming from the public coffers, and he went to all the wealthy and all the nobles and said, if I can do this, you can do it as well. So David was an incredible fundraiser. I'd like to have him around today to do that. So that whole mechanism, that's not here. That doesn't exist. So when we get to this period between the Testaments, finally, we're going to look at this at the beginning of our class in just a little bit. Finally, they finished doing what God wanted them to do, bare bones restart the temple with a whole lot less people than used to be there generations before. And now, what's life going to be like from this period, from the close of the Old Testament, to the coming of John the Baptizer, John the Immerser, John the Baptist? We've got 400 plus years. The temple, the release of the people from captivity by Cyrus is 536 to the time the temple's destroyed, all right, is 70 AD. That period of time, 600 years, is a time which the second temple is going to come into existence, and it's going to serve God's purpose for something greater than the temple itself. And that's going to come into play as we go further. And then, of course, the rest of the Old Testament history, as it concludes, leads to the coming of John the Baptizer, John the Baptist, and then the time of Christ. So that's a whirlwind tour of biblical history, slowing down when we got close to the intertestamental period. What we want to do now is spend a lot more time in saying, how did all this stuff happen? Not just the fall of the northern kingdom and the fall of the southern kingdom, but how did all of these things take place to make it so that God's will is going to be done? Let me double check to make sure I've got all the other charts that I wanted to look at before we go forward into the main material. All right, the bibliography. This is also in the handouts. If you go to the website, World Video Bible School has given me permission to distribute this literature, and it's a handout. It's about 47 pages. This will give you a very detailed summary of the material we're going to study. We're not going to go through all of that, but it's there. It's handout number 1C, it looks like, but you're welcome to that. And again, all these things are the same link that we mentioned before. I'll close that. We just went through that
and
one.
If you go online, you can see the videos where they're doing archaeological.
Correct. And if I think of it, I will send the links to that particular study video as well in an email that I'll send out. I have not sent that yet. There are lots and lots and lots of material, and I'm not going to go through all of this. This is an academic resource, and all of these multiple pages, they're 38 pages, and this is part one of all the literature that's out there that studies what goes on in the period between the Testaments. So if you want to get involved in this, let me just simply say there's a lot of literature out there. Now let me simply repeat, this is not inspired. This is gleaning sources from extra-biblical things. The writings of Josephus, the writings of other Jewish and secular writings and so forth. The writings of Philo is a contemporary Jew who spoke about these things. So there's a lot of literature that you can get to go through this. This is another one that I've included in the handouts. It's handout number, I just went through that, handout number 5. This is stuff that happened in between the Testaments that will give you perspective as to why it happened. Notice the beginning of this, the intertestamental period. The writer talks about the Essenes. Who were those people? Don't see them at the close of the Old Testament. And yet there's an influence that they have. They're the ones who are behind the writings of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The pseudepigrapha, that's the literature that we're going to look at when we get an opportunity to do so as we're going forward. So there are a lot of resources that you can use to study above and beyond what we're doing here. We already looked at the bibliography. Here's another chart, and I may have numbered it differently. But this chart was done by Ken Hicks. He was a student at the School of Preaching in Knoxville years ago. He was a graphic illustrator in his professional life before he came to school. And he created this chart. It's the kings of Judah on one side, the right, kings of Israel on the other. But what's also interesting is he lists all the prophets and how they fit time-wise into that period of time. So notice, we're going to start here on the Babylonian kings, Nebuchadnezzar, and so forth. But we're going to go through the period of Ezekiel and Daniel. They are prophets during the period of the exile. But notice, Medo-Persian, that's Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. We're going to refer to all three of those prophets because they were prophets during this period of time, and move the chart, during this period of time in which Israel was going through a rebuilding process at the close of the Old Testament canon, getting into the time in between the Testaments. So that chart is also there. So there's a tremendous amount of material that you will find that's included in the handouts that I encourage you to take advantage of. We're not going to look at all of those things all the time. Very quickly, there's another series of slides, and I forget which numbers this are. This is the same chart that's there on the slides, but this is in large print, so you can see here are all the periods, the starting and ending point. So I took two of the points here, these two on the left, the two things, and I made them larger so you can see them. And there's also material about how to understand interpreting biblical history. So again, very quickly, this is what we're going to do from the standpoint of starting now. We're going to start with the Jewish exiles' return, go to what Jerusalem's going to go through it from the standpoint of rebuilding, and hopefully we'll get into that section, Alexander Changes the World, later this evening. If not, we'll save that for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, we will go through the Maccabean period. What does that mean? Who were the Hasmoneans? What does it mean that the Romans are coming? This is the nation that takes control of Palestine with the defeat of Jerusalem in 63 BC by Pompey, and they're going to be under the thumb of the Romans for some time to come, and then the rule of Herod. So that starts in the period before the close of the intertestamental period and takes us into, obviously, the time of Christ. So we'll talk about that. And then what we're going to do later, if we have time on Saturday, whoops, went a little bit too fast there. My apologies. Let me go back to that. On Saturday, I'll just make this bigger quickly as we'll talk about these key players. We already talked about the literature. All right, that's the lay of the land. And again, all this material we'll send to everybody who is registered. And if you haven't sent an email in and registered, we'll send everybody an email about all the class files later. So if you haven't done that yet, I sent one email out, but we'll send others later to everybody to keep them up. Again, this is the text that we're using. It's called From Malachi to Matthew. This is the digital version. I forget, it's like $10 or whatever, but there's a print version as well. I did not bring my copy. If I think of it, I'll bring that tomorrow. All right, before we get into the first part of our class, we've got a few minutes before we finish a 45-minute segment here. Any questions or comments about what we mentioned? I know we've gone kind of slow. I'll pick up the speed as we get a little further. I'm being funny. Any questions or comments? Right? Does everything make sense? If it doesn't make sense, you got to tell me, because I don't know what I'm thinking, and I certainly don't know what you're thinking unless you tell me. So you got to tell me. All right. So I'm going to go back to what we were mentioning before. All of these charts that we mentioned are at this site, thebible.net/GSOP between the testaments. So everything that I've shown you already on the screen, it's already here. And what will be there later is the audio from the class, the video from the class, and the slides up to this point, plus the notes that I'm going to present. Now, the notes that I'm doing tonight are going to be much more thorough because it's grounding ourselves in what's going on to get us to the point of the start of the period between the testaments. Tomorrow, we're going to be more outlining stuff so we can go faster. So you're going to think we're going very slow as we get into the material that I'm about to present. And you will, in part, be right because I want us to make sure we grasp what's going on. So these notes that I'm going to show you will be presented on screen as well. And these are constantly in flux, so I'm constantly working on making them even better. So let me go through this very quickly, and then we'll get into the heart of the stuff. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back. So I was teased a little bit before about my really highfalutin description here, basic stuff. So this is what we're going through now, basic stuff. Introduction to the class. The syllabus will include all this material as well as what you're going to do if you're taking it for credit, and I'm constantly tweaking that. The bibliography we've already introduced, the requirements will be part of the syllabus, and then the outline of the rest of the class. That's what we did just a second ago. Overview of biblical history, that's that chart we looked at, and we want to ask some questions as we get in this material. Why was Israel in captivity? They didn't do what God wanted. So the reason why the situation exists between the close of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament is Israel made some bad choices. And because of that, Israel suffered the consequences. And so what we are addressing is a principle that God has put in place going all the way back to the Garden of Eden. If you obey me, you will be blessed. If you don't obey me, you're going to lose blessings. And losing blessings means you don't get what God wants you to have. Very quickly, let me say something. Sometimes we have a picture of God as a cosmic policeman, that God's waiting for people to make a mistake so he can pull us over and give us a spiritual ticket. Now, don't get me wrong, God does punish people for making mistakes, especially willful, rebellious mistakes. But here's a better illustration. God is not just waiting for us to make mistakes. God is hoping we will refrain from making mistakes so he can bless us unlimited in an unlimited way from his spiritual storehouse. Now, I offer two passages to demonstrate that. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 13, this is the first of three successive sins by the prophet, excuse me, not by the prophet, but by the king Saul. It's written by Samuel. It's about Saul. Saul couldn't wait for Samuel to show up to offer sacrifice before Saul and the children of Israel went into battle against the Philistines. And so Saul presumed to do it himself. And when Samuel came to him, he says, "You have no idea what you just missed. If you would have been faithful to God, God would have blessed you and kept you as king." So that's incredible. So if you do something wrong, you know, if you go too fast, you're going to get pulled over and get a speeding ticket. But if you do something that's really wrong and you end up spending some time, you know, incarcerated for whatever reason, you might think, well, you deserve to do that. Yeah, I got that. But there's something else. In addition to being punished for what you did, you miss out on what you could have had you not made that sin. Now, Evelyn and I were talking about this. If you haven't seen the movie Just Mercy yet, let me encourage you to see that. And it's about injustice that has taken place in different places, especially in the South in the 60s and 70s, against people who were poor or the wrong skin color or didn't know the right people. And I don't want to get political. This is a social issue that the prophets address. But in that context, it talked about people who were imprisoned wrongfully. Okay, if they did something really wrong, they deserved to be in prison. But if they were in prison wrongfully, then they missed blessings that they could have had. And so there's a model that's there. Israel was not wrongfully being punished. They were rightfully being punished. But in the context of being punished, they missed the blessings they could have had. Had Saul been faithful, he could have stayed king. Now later, when the kingdom split, and the prophet Ahijah came to Jeroboam, the king who's going to be in the north, he tore a garment, gave him 10 pieces, and he says, you're going to get these 10 tribes, the other two are going to remain with Rehoboam because of David. And he says, if you are faithful as David was faithful, I will bless you as I blessed David. Now listen to that. If you are faithful as David was faithful, I will bless you like I blessed David. What's interesting is Jeroboam never received any of those blessings. Why? Because he wasn't faithful like David was faithful. So because of his unfaithfulness, not only was he going to be punished, but he missed the blessings they could have had. All right? And so that's a biblical principle. So why was Israel going into captivity? Because they didn't do what God wanted them to do. And because they didn't do what God wanted them to do, they missed the blessings God wanted to give them. So this is a silly illustration. Here's a huge pile of blessings, unlimited pile of blessings. God says, I'll give them all to you. But you got to be faithful. And here's what happens if you're unfaithful. What's over there? There's no blessings. Which do you want? Well, everybody wants the blessings. But you don't get the blessings by being unfaithful. You get the blessings by being faithful. So when you are unfaithful, you miss what God wants you to have here. And that's part of why Israel goes into captivity. And that's oversimplified it. Why did God allow Israel to return? Because God never gives up on people. Makes no difference how many times they make mistakes. That's one of the messages you see in the book of Judges. At one point in the midst of the book of Judges, God says, and I'm being a little free in the way I word this, God says, in effect, I don't know if you've been counting, but I've counted, and this is the seventh time you've wandered away from me, and I've still taken you back. Well, God wasn't counting to make a point. He was saying, I want you to know I will always forgive you. Remember what Jesus was teaching to Peter when Peter asked the question, how many times will I forgive my brother? Seven times? Seven. You know, seven? He says, no, you know, 70 times that. The point is, it's unlimited. Why did he say that? Because that's a God thing. That's a Jesus thing. All right? Mm-hmm. And so God is always going to forgive. So why did God allow Israel to return? God stands ready, willing, and able always to take somebody back.
Message of the book of Hosea.
Yeah, it's the message in large measure of most of the Bible. God's a forgiving God. All right? So, what was Israel's future? They messed up big time. Northern kingdom is gone. That seed line of kings has gone, changed multiple times. The seed line of kings of David continues, but they're not reigning. That seed line in the nation Judah goes into captivity, and God's going to bring them back. So, why? This still has something to do with God's plan for Israel and his redemptive scheme. There was a Eve seed line connection. There was an Abraham seed line connection. There's a David seed line connection. And all three of those are going to end up going to Jesus. So we make reference to that. The seed promised to Eve, the one to Abraham, that is Isaac, Jacob, Israel, nation, and so forth, and ultimately leading to the Messiah. And I need to enter one here fast. I'll fix this so that it'll be forever fixed. The Davidic seed line leading to the Messiah. So all three of those, only I need to spell it right, right? There, that looks better. All right, so the Davidic seed line that's going to Jesus, all that's still in play. And so because Israel had made a mistake, that didn't change God's prophecy concerning what's going to happen. All right, so here's the significance of the period in between the Testaments. All right, we want us to understand that restoration is going to begin. We're about to get into that in just a second. We're going to take a break in a few minutes. But we're going to start the beginning of a restoration, and this is a huge do-over. All right? They are starting over from scratch. No temple, no king, nobody living in the land. It's not even livable at this point. And God allows them this period of time to start all over again.
Were the genealogies still intact so they knew who was Levitical?
That's part of what takes place, especially in the book of Chronicles, and it's going to come up in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah with reference to reestablishing the priesthood. You had to prove who you were. You couldn't just wander in and say, hey, I'm a priest. You had to be able to establish
because
that.
Because with the destruction in AD 70.
And that's another totally, issue from the standpoint of...
Totally destroyed.
That's another thing. Genealogical records were not kept after that to the extent we think they are. I had a brother in Christ said he knew somebody that was a descendant of the high priest. I said, how does he know that? He said he can trace his genealogy back to the 1600s. And I said, first, that's not far enough. And second, he's starting from the wrong end.
Yeah.
All right. Starting here and going back and having somebody who's claiming to be part of the priesthood going back 400 years, that sounds impressive. But there's 1,600 years on the other side you got to connect. And you need to start there coming this direction. So that could not be done. All right. We're going to stop and we'll take a break. We've got about 48 minutes or so. We want to keep it around 45 to 50 minutes. Take a break. And we're going to start here. Again, notice it says hour two as we're getting forward. All right. Let's take a break.